I'm really, really glad that I can share with you this afternoon. And yeah, really thank you for listening. And I know that you won't listen to me, but you'll listen to God. And so that is a real privilege. I sound a little bit husky in my voice. Who would have thought that dancing would kill your voice? Didn't know that, but there you go. So it's been mentioned a little bit already that I'm talking about doubt to faith today. And I suppose what I really want for us to be able to grasp is that we would be people who are obedient to faith, even in the face of doubt. And I'll just preempt where I want us to land, that I want us to be able to confess any doubt that was within us, to be able to choose faith, and to be able to ask for more. More of God, more of His Spirit, and more faith. And I suppose I just wanted to say that this teaching is in testimony. It's actually not, I'm not an expert, I haven't read everything there is to read on this, that this is actually out of a place of my own walk with God, my own walk through a lot of doubt and a lot of misunderstanding around what faith looks like. But yeah, I'm just really privileged to be able to share my story with you and to be able to hopefully draw out some knowledge and some wisdom and some insights from that. So I think as we begin, it's a good place to start with just explaining why I think this is an important topic for us at this time. If you've been through our huddle process and know the journey of walking the circle, one of the things that we like to ask is, why is this significant for you now? Why is this standing out now? And so I want to remind us of the sort of framework of our teaching this year, that we've been looking at cross, kingdom and spirit. We've been looking at cross, so like the good news and theology of the cross and salvation. We've been looking at participating as people of the kingdom. And then we have the spirit, which is understanding what it means to be people who are led by the spirit. And we've been hoping that in all of this, we'll get to this red hot center, which we're calling the radical middle. And that's the place where we want to live as followers of God. And so far this year, we haven't done any, well, we've been looking at spirit, is basically what I want to say. We've been looking at understanding the person of the spirit, learning about the gifts of the spirit, as well as some of the practical how-tos for listening to the spirit and praying in the spirit. And so in all of this, I think it's fair to say that we would believe that some faith is required. You can't get very far if you don't have any of it. And if there is a lacking faith, if there's doubt, which you might describe it, I think it can create a real barrier for how we actually reach this radical middle that we want to live out of. And so it's important, if doubt is something that we're struggling with, to know how to move from doubt to faith. So to understand doubt a little bit further, I just wanted to unpack it for us. And I actually think that there are three different kinds of doubt that we might experience in our lives. There's a cynicism that is doubt, and that's a doubt that is stubborn and bitter, that just says, that's crap, that's stupid, what are you thinking, that's weird. And I think that that's actually can also be framed as a rebellion. It's a no, God, that is, I'm not going there, that's just not okay. Then we have a lamenting kind of doubt that is, I think that's a seasonal kind of doubt, similar to what we might have sung about in Blessed Be Your Name, that there are times where there's just mourning and there's sadness and there's pain and it just feels dry, that you're saying, God, I know that you're God, but I really don't feel that right now. Where are you? Who are you? And that can be doubt. And then I think we have an uncertainty that is doubt, that is just, it's can be skeptical. I'm not really sure. It's a lack of faith, a lack of trust in God. And so as we think back to this move of the Spirit, this place where we want to be people of the cross, walking in salvation, living by the Spirit, living missional lives, seeing lives transformed, freedom for captives, sight for the blind, healing, miracles, prophecy, boom, boom, boom. It's like, I just describe it as this Jesus explosion. I just have this question of, where does my doubt fit in all of that? if I have doubt, how do I reach Jesus' explosion? I don't know. And this has been my struggle. And on the other hand of where does my doubt fit in all of this, there's a question of where does all of this fit in my doubt? Because I want this, but I also want the safe and the reasoned place of my doubt where I've thought this through and I'm not sure and I want to stand in that and I want to rebel and I want to be stubborn and I don't understand God. I am stuck. How do I move from doubt to faith? And over the past few months, God has really had me on a journey of learning what to do with that. And I will share some of those reflections later. But of course, I want for us to turn to the Bible together because I wonder if this struggle, this place of stuckness, was actually present during the time of Jesus as well. And I think perhaps it might have been. So the story today from the Bible is from Mark chapter 9, verses 14 to 29. And for a bit of context, Jesus has just been up the mountain with Peter, James and John prior to this story, and he appears to them with Moses and Elijah. I don't know if any of that is really relevant to where we are now, but it just shows where we've been. They come back down the mountain, and this is what's going on. So, when they came to the other disciples, they saw a large crowd around them and the teachers of the law arguing with them. As soon as all the people saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed with wonder and ran to greet him. "What are you arguing with them about?" he asked. A man in the crowd answered, "Teacher, I brought you my son, who is possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not." "You unbelieving generation," Jesus replied, "how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me." So they brought him. When the spirit saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into a convulsion. He fell to the ground and rolled around, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the boy's father, "How long has he been like this?" "From childhood," he answered. "It has often thrown him into the fire or water to kill him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us." "If you can," says Jesus, "everything is possible for one who believes." Immediately the boy's father exclaimed, "I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief." When Jesus saw that a crowd was running to the scene, he rebuked the impure spirit. "You deaf and mute spirit," he said, "I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." The spirit shrieked, convulsed him violently, and came out. The boy looked so much like a corpse that many said, "He's dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him to his feet, and he stood up. After Jesus had gone indoors, his disciples asked him privately, "Why couldn't we drive it out?" He replied, "This kind can come out only by prayer." So I feel like as we've been exploring this area of the Spirit, particularly learning to pray in the Spirit and how to heal by the Spirit, we've done a lot of looking to Jesus. We've done a lot of watching how Jesus did it and wanting to follow in his ways. We want to heal like he can heal, so we've been looking to him. We've been learning that in Jesus' name, if you command the Spirit to go, we hope that that's just what will happen. But what is our response and how do we respond as people who want to receive healing and as people who want to know that when we pray for healing, we're able to see healing come? I wonder if maybe we need to take a step back and to look at people who are in that position in our process and in our journey of looking to Jesus as he does it as well. So in the story that we've just read, we see both of these positions. We see the story of a man in the crowd, a man who wants healing for his son who's suffered for years, his son who can't speak, his son who falls to the ground in a fit, foaming at the mouth and gnashing his teeth. This spirit that has forced his son to be suicidal, trying to throw himself into the fire and water to kill himself. He comes to the disciples, he wants his son to be free and healed. And then we have the disciples, They've been choosing faith. They've been practicing healing. These are Jesus' guys. He's sent them out. He's given them authority over impure spirits. They've witnessed him heal. They've witnessed him walk on water, feed 5,000 people from 5 loaves of bread and a couple of fish. They've literally been walking with God here on earth. And then this man comes to them asking for healing. They try and they fail. He's not healed. This is my biggest fear. This is why I often choose to listen to my doubt, because I don't want to get it wrong and I don't want to look a fool like that. I mean, how do you think they're feeling? They must be so embarrassed. Why couldn't they heal? And now people are arguing about it and they're stuck in the crowds as this religious debate is going on, and this man who was asked for healing he comes to Jesus and pretty much shames them in front of him. And I mean, no wonder. I feel like no wonder they probably find themselves doubting. And when we're in this place where we're not seeing healing but wanting it, well, what do we do? And I believe we see two responses in this story. We see a man who is obedient to his faith, a man who says, yes, I want healing, I'm going to come for healing, I'm going to inquire of Jesus, and I'll bring my son again. And this is the part that I love. He says, yes, I believe, I have my doubts, but help me in those. I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. And we also see the disciples. The disciples who have been saying yes, who've been following Jesus, and now they're not sure why. They haven't seen healing. But what do? They're obedient as well. They're part of bringing the boy again. Jesus says, bring the boy, and it says they brought him. And I love that silently and privately, later when the crowds have dispersed, they come back to Jesus. They come back to him. Why couldn't we do it? They come to him and they seek him and they abide with him again. And Jesus says, this kind needs prayer. Come and be with the Father. And so I want to suggest for us that we need to be a people who choose to be obedient to our faith over our doubt, and to be people who come back to God, to seek him, and to spend time with him, to abide with him. And so one of the things that I've loved about the way that we've been approaching our topic so far for the year is that it's something that we haven't suggested that we're just going to get instantly. We continue to revisit this topic week and week that we gather. We've been having monthly prayer nights where we're actually learning how to upskill and how to train in this. Keep choosing to try to learn and understand how to grow in this. That we're actually creating a training ground for ourselves. And I think that that's a helpful way to view this scenario as well, that as we want to become people who choose faith over doubt, that we're actually upskilling in this and we're training in this and we're preparing ourselves to be faithful. I really love Stephen's story from a few gatherings ago, where he shared his own story about how God had woke him up and asked him to sit up and sit down and sit up and sit down, and then go around the house and do all these random domestic chores like boil the kettle and vacuum the floor. And all of that was training for obedience. And similarly, I don't know if you've listened to any of the podcasts from the Red Rebuilders Conference, but I feel like John Mark Comer, he speaks a lot about this idea as well, that it's spiritual formation and it's a process where we take steps and actions to modify our behaviour as we live day to day and moment by moment with Jesus. And so the more we choose to obey, the easier it becomes. And the more we come to God, the easier the obedience will be. And so when my heart isn't faith, when our hearts aren't faith, we need our actions to be faith, because faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. And if we never choose belief, our unbelief will never be given the opportunity to be transformed into the confidence for what is unseen. And so in one of John Mark Comer's sessions from Rebuilders, he says that to be human is to be dynamic, not static. And he shares this within the context of spiritual formation. And I think the word for us here is that if we stay static in our doubt, if we refuse to move or act, it will form us to be people whose unbelief speaks louder than our faith. And sadly, I don't know if we will actually see healing from that place. And for all the times that I've chosen not to act in faith and to listen to my doubt, this really has formed me and actually hardened my heart to faith. And now I've got to do a lot of unlearning, a lot of untraining from that place. And I just want to share that on my journey, there have been a couple of lies that I think God has really had to smash for me on this topic. And I want to share them with you because if they've been lies that you've been listening to as well, I want you to hear that they are lies, and I want you to be able to smash them in your own lives too and live in this place of freedom where you can be people of faith. So the first lie is that I've been telling myself that I'm a doubter, that it's who I am, that my natural bent is to doubt. It's just the way I'm wired. It's actually a lie. Doubter is not my identity. It's not your identity. Doubt is a posture, but our posture is something that we, together with God, have the ability to shift. And that comes back to the training, how we train our bodies and our to reposition ourselves in faith. And the other lie that I've needed to shatter within my own mind is that faith is either something that I have or I don't have. And in moments when I don't have it, well, I don't have any reason to act. That the lie is that I need some specific level of faith to be able to act in faith. And that's a lie. God says if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can... I can't remember. Move a mountain. I think just, again, reflecting back to last week when Stephen spoke to us about spiritual gifts, and he asked us to put up our hands if anybody has experienced the gift of faith. And he said you should all put your hands up because you've all received faith. You have salvation in God. It is by grace that you have received faith. And I need to rewire my brain to say, yes, I have faith to act on. And I'm going to. So in the past few months, I have been in training with Dan. He has set me a big challenge, that I have been training my faith muscle. And part of that has been that every morning I wake up and I say, God, thank you for the gift of faith. Please give me an opportunity to choose faith over doubt today. And so some days the opportunities have been more glorious than others. Sometimes it's been pretty mundane, and sometimes it's been pretty outward. It's been in the face of others. Sometimes it's just been on my own, just me and God. But I wanted to share a couple of stories from my training journey to encourage you to also maybe jump on board that training journey as well. So the first story I wanted to share was from when, I don't know how many months ago it was now, maybe a couple of months, but when I was working at the Drunken Admiral still, I was a waitress there, and I've recently just finished up there, but there was a guy that we worked with, and he fell off his horse and broke his wrist quite badly. And for many weeks, he just walked around with a cast on and I didn't think too much of it. But there was one evening where I overheard him talking about his wrist again, and something just rose up in me, and I was like, no, it is not okay that your wrist is like this. God wants to heal it. And I was like, oh God, now I'm going to have to pray for it. I know. And so I said to him, I was like, and this guy, he does have an understanding of God. Like, he doesn't go to church, but he is a Christian. And so I said to him, I said, I would really love to pray for your wrist later in the evening, if you're willing. And he said, sure. So at the end of the night, when the shift was over, I went out the back with him into the storeroom, and Chris covered me in case anybody came and dropped in on us. Yeah, teamwork. And I just prayed for his wrist, and I did what Milton had taught us, that you picture the wrist and you picture what's going on inside, and you try and pray into that. And I just prayed for, things to realign and stuff to come back together, and, nothing really happened. I didn't know what was happening, but, I did what I was told. I said, how's it feeling? And he said, yeah, it feels good, actually. Like, I think it feels like it's freeing up a bit or something. And so I said, okay, well, can we ask for some more? And he said, sure. So I prayed again, and yeah, that was pretty much it. I mean, he still wore a cast, and it didn't miraculously heal or anything, but it was definitely a growth in me. And we actually got to have a really good conversation about it as well at the end. And I think, like, that's just been the thing in all of this, is that everything is to the glory of God. And it doesn't always look like we expect it to look, but I know that God is slowly doing something in me and in my heart that I believe is to his glory. So the other story I have to share is, this was also probably from a few months ago, when I'd obviously had a few good days, and I was like, yep, awesome, I'm doing really well at this. And I remember in the morning I was just walking on the steps by our house, and I was like, oh God, this is so exciting, what are you going to get me to do today? I was like, yeah, faith is gift, woohoo, opportunities, bring them to me. And then I was listening to a podcast doing the washing up at our kitchen sink, and in the podcast, it was one of the ones from like the TBC monthly ones, I don't know which one, but the guy was talking about how he received the gift of tongues, and how it was really significant for him, because as somebody who's quite a wordy person and somebody who likes to, engage his mind and think things through logically, it became a real way that he could have intimacy with God. And I, the instant I heard it, I actually just started crying, and I was like, God, what is this about? And I sort of took a moment to ask God why I felt so emotional about it. And in asking God about that, I just realized that I really wanted that intimacy with God. But I would never ask God. I would never ask God to give me a gift like that. Partly because I'm cynical and I think that's just really weird. And the other part is just that, oh God, it's okay, I don't really mind if you don't give me your gifts, like, I'll just wait around for them, but if you don't give them, it's okay, like. And I think part of this doubting thing for me is that if God doesn't give me something, well, it actually gives me a fallback. Oh, it's okay, I never really wanted it anyway, God, it's fine. And yeah, I really was challenged and confronted by that. And the next day I came to Kai, like, I really needed to process it with somebody else. And we prayed together, and I asked God for the gift of tongues, and nothing happened. But I said, okay, God, I'm going to keep asking you. That is the faithful thing here. I'm going to keep asking you. And so then that following Sunday, we had a gathering here. And at the end, we had our time of prayer ministry, and I came forward, and Kai said, do you want to ask again? And I said, yes, I do. And so I just, here on my knees, I just prayed and I asked God for it again. And again, like, it took a little while, not much was really happening. And then I felt like it was like something was bubbling up on my tongue. Like, I could no longer speak my own words. I couldn't really speak any words, but it was just like this, like, whooshing in my mouth. And then it was just like, all of a sudden, my tongue just folded up and I started speaking in tongues. And it was amazing. I just, yeah, God actually answered my prayer. And it was really cool. And actually, what has since happened is I've actually slipped back into this place where I'm engaging my rational mind again and actually can't do it anymore. And that's really sad. It's my sad story of doubt to faith. So again, I've been challenged to ask again. And so I'm asking God again for the gift of tongues. And in his time and his good grace, I know he'll give the gift back. So those are my two stories. I have other stories you can come and ask me about later. But I do hope that they are an encouragement to you. I'm not sure where you're at in all of this. I'm not sure what's been standing out for you or how you're feeling about all of this. But we're going to end with communion. We're going to end with a time to be able to process that and to ask God what he's saying. And just to remind us that I really want us to be able to confess our doubt, to be able to say sorry to God that we've been doubting, and to be able to choose faith, to ask for more of God, to ask that he would use us as people to be able to heal the people around us in our workplaces, in our neighbourhoods, to be able to share the gospel when he asks, to be able to ask for his gifts, and to be able to do this Jesus explosion thing. So communion is also a time where we draw back to the Father and we abide. It's that process of coming back to him. And yeah, I just want us to remember that Jesus took bread and he broke it. And he said, my body will be broken for you. So eat and remember, do this and think of me. And he took the cup and he poured it out and he said, this is my blood poured out for you. Drink and remember me. And in this process of taking on all of our sin and burdens, of being broken, having his blood poured out, he was raised to life again. And that is the very way that we have the gift of faith. So we're just going to have a moment of silence. We're going to ask God what he's saying, what has stood out for us, what doubt we may have to confess, what lies we might need to have God speak to, what gifts we might want to ask for. I'm not sure what it looks like for you, but God knows. And so let's just take a moment to ask him. In this time of preparing my sermon, I was again reading the story of the woman at the well. And I love that story for the way that she has an encounter with Jesus. And what actually struck me that I'd never noticed about the story before was that when the disciples come back, it says she left her water jar and she went back to her village or wherever she was. And it just really struck me that Jesus says, you will have living water. You will never thirst again. And she leaves her jar. That is faith. I know that for me, as a doubter, I'd probably be like, oh, I'll just take that for later, just in case, because I might need to come back again. But she left her jar, and she had received faith. She'd received salvation. And this communion table, this time of prayer that we're going to have together, is a time where you can come and leave your jar. You won't have to go away and think, oh, I might have to come back again. If there's stuff that God is pressing on your heart, deal with it here and now. This is the place. So we're going to play a song, and I invite you to come forward and to share in communion.